Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
Wonderful to be with you guys this morning. How are we doing? Apart from too warm? Doing all right. I've done all I can. I've opened doors. It's about as far as I was within my power. If you don't know me, my name's Alan, part of the team here. If you're joining us online, it's such a joy to have you with us. Our hope and our prayer is that you connect with Jesus deeply where you are and where you're watching. And we'd love to have you with us in person sometime real soon. So, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at a little sermon series called Life in Community. Looking at this idea of what does it mean to actually form deep connections and deep friendships with those around us and to journey through life together unashamedly. We're doing that within the context of we think life groups are great. Have you caught that? We think you need one in your life. Small places where you are known. Because as we talked about 2 weeks ago, it's within community that we are formed, that we are pointed more towards the life that Jesus has for us. It's in community that we're cared for and looked after, and actually it's in community that we most impact the world around us. And I'm not going to reteach a sermon from 2 weeks ago, you're all saying amen, but you can catch that online. And then last week, we began looking at these four key building blocks of community, and Aidan helped us think through hospitality. Not Trabix and fancy china and, you know, Jimmy Oliver, nothing wrong with that, but creating spaces where the other can be received as a friend and where each of us feels safe to build connections beyond the superficial. And if you missed that, you can catch it online. And so this morning, I am going to commit cultural heresy. I'm going to talk about commitment, about the idea that being committed to someone or something, giving our firm yes and being unwavering in that yes, actually brings freedom in life. Heresy in our modern culture. We live in a moment where freedom is held on the highest rungs of value. Freedom of choice, freedom of expression, free to be and say and do whatever we deem to be best for us in any given moment. Freedom to pick our own truth, freedom to define ourselves however we want, and freedom to reimagine God, often in kind of our preferences. We're told that life lived right is life that it has the widest range of possibilities and choices right at our fingertips. Anything then that limits our choices or limits our possibilities is bad or dangerous or even oppressive. Don't let anyone or anything restrict you in any given way. Limitations are the opposite of freedom. To be true to yourself and live your best life, you need endless possibilities and infinite choices. That's the message that we're actually hearing day in, day out, whether you realize it or not. But the truth is, those very things that are supposed to make us feel free are actually utterly paralyzing. And in my opinion, one of the biggest contributing factors to the pandemic of anxiety and mental health issues that we're seeing, especially in the younger generation. Limitations and boundaries, instead of restricting us, actually free us to make choices. And infinite possibilities, far from being freeing, are actually crippling with uncertainty. Have you had this moment? You decide on a night, I'd like to watch a movie. Have you had that moment? When did that happen? Those of you with kids are like, yeah, about 10 years ago. And you sit down, you get your remote control out, and you start scrolling through Netflix. There's nothing there. Maybe Prime, maybe Disney, maybe Apple. Half an hour later, you've scrolled past like 1,000 movies. Every movie that's ever made. And there's nothing to watch. And so you watch a repeat of something that you've watched an episode of a million times. Or you do, like, gut it out and you pick something. And 5 minutes in, you're like, nah, not interested. I'll just scroll on my phone for the next 4 hours. Too close to the bone? Anybody remember this place? You went there on a Friday night. They had a limited number of things. The one you wanted was already taken by somebody else. You wandered around for 10 minutes and you made a choice. And you went home, maybe got some sweets. Your dad was feeling generous. And you put it on and you watched it. And you watched it from the beginning to the end. And by gosh, you enjoyed it. Right? Less choice, but actually output much more delivered. Having so much choice, so much so-called freedom in like every area of our lives has actually formed something in us. We desperately, desperately struggle to commit. To commit to even a movie for an hour and a half. We struggle to commit, to give our yes and to see it through. And then at the same time, we wonder why we feel so disconnected, so unsure of where we belong or if we even belong anywhere. It's actually an issue of commitment. It's an issue of commitment. So what do I mean by commitment? What I mean is it's making a choice for one option above all others and sticking to it. Making a choice and sticking to it. It's the central anchor point if you think about any relationship, especially if you think about marriage. You know, in our vows on a wedding day, we make a choice for one person and we declare to all who are listening that we what? Forsake all others. We choose to limit ourselves from a pool of 8 billion to one. And we say amen. And it is actually this commitment to each other that makes marriage work. It is love. It is true love. Not the fleeting emotions or the mushy infatuations that come and go over a marriage. And those are really good and really necessary. But commitment is actually true love. Commitment is love in action. One writer, Margaret Farley, puts it this way. Commitment is love's way of being whole while it still grows into wholeness. And promises help us to stabilize our loves in the midst of the fickleness of our feelings. Isn't that great? And I know this to be true. Laurie and I are more in love than ever. Aww. Because, you wait for it. Because we took commitment seriously. And when emotions weren't there, or emotions were there that weren't the nice kind, we took our commitment to one another seriously. And when marriage wasn't yet what it always promised to be, we needed to work on it. And the truth is, our first year, our first couple of years of marriage were actually really hard. They weren't what we thought it was going to be, and it wasn't all, you know, rainbows and sunshine, and it was pretty tough. But it's our vows and our commitment to one another that carried us through. And I have to say it, we are 20 years married today. This very day. But commitment is what made that possible. And Laurie's enduring patience. Commitment. Not emotion, not feeling, not stumbling into something that just happened to be right. But commitment. And commitment is the bedrock of any significant relationship or friendship or community. In her wonderful book, Living Into Community, Christine Pohl talks about commitment as promise keeping. It's that willingness to give our yes to something or to someone, to willfully limit ourselves and our own options, and then to prioritize that choice with consistency. To follow through on our word, even when it hurts. Can you feel the heresy in the room? You're all like, you can't say that. Self-limitations? Commitment. That's what it is. So why is commitment important? Well, first and foremost, it's the core of who God is. It's the core of who he is. In Exodus 34:6, those of you who are part of Friday Church, you'll know this off by heart. We've been preaching through it for like 6 months. One verse. It's slow on Fridays. But in Exodus 34:6, God describes himself. He tells us what he is like. And so it says, as he, that's God, passed in front of Moses, he called out. He said, I am the Lord, the Lord. I'm the God who is tender and kind. I'm gracious. I'm slow to get angry. I am faithful and full of loyal love. It's these two last words that are really important today when we think about commitment. Faithful and loyal love. Two words in the Hebrew, chesed, is loyal love, and emet, is faithfulness. I said those right. Often they come together as worship, especially throughout the Psalms, as people declare back to God who they see him and who they experience him to be. And chesed is this ferocious, loyal, protective, unrelenting, self-giving, generous love that never changes, that never wavers. And then emet is this description of something that is reliable and stable and steadfast and unchanging and immovable and trustworthy and true. It's like a giant rock in the midst of a sea that millennia cannot shift one iota. Chesed and emet. God is saying, I am these things towards my people. Isaiah 54, though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfeeling love, chesed, for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord who has compassion on you. Psalm 33, for the word of the Lord is right and true. That's emet. He's faithful in all he does. The Lord loves righteousness and justice, and the earth is full of his chesed, his unfeeling, loyal love. God is fiercely committed to his creation. His presence and his word are unshakable ground that we can stand upon, that we can rely upon, that we can build our lives upon with confidence. His commitment gives us security. And he demonstrates that true commitment isn't conditional, isn't dependent on the other party's performance and whether they keep up their side of the bargain. 2 Timothy 2, Paul writes this about God. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. Pistos in the Greek. Same as emet in the Hebrew. For he cannot disown himself. God is covenantly committed to his creation. Unshaking, unwavering, solid commitment is part of who he is. We're called to be like our Father. Another reason is that it's how we, it's what we see at the core of the early church. It's the model we see with the first believers. In Acts 2, just after Pentecost, as the early church is born, we read this, Acts 2:42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of the people, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. The very first word describing the early church in the Bible is devoted, committed. A willing choice to lay down individual rights and preferences for the sake of each other. That's uncomfortable. Can you feel it? It's right there. They were devoted to a number of things. And it plays out in a number of ways. It was big. They were meeting together in the temple courts, all gathering as one body, unified. And it was small. They were in each other's homes and places of intimate connection. It was liturgical, their devotion. It was to teaching and to communion and to prayer and to worship. It was also mundane. They were devoted to the mundane, to simply sharing meals together and doing life together. It was regular. It says they were there every day in different places and spaces, connecting in community. One that might surprise us is it was joyful. They met together and did all this and committed to one another and were devoted to one another with glad and sincere hearts. It was sacrificial, sharing and selling and making sure that no one in their need or no one in their midst had need. And it was powerful as God moved in their midst. Signs and wonders and daily salvation. But it's rooted and it's bedded in devotion and commitment to one another. It flows from that place. So we see commitment at the core of who God is and how he interacts with his people. And we see it as fundamental in the minds of the early church. And if we had time, we could see in the Bible, both Old and New Testament, it has a lot to say about people who fail to keep their promises, or their oaths, as they say in the Bible, who make commitments with no intention of sticking to them. So it's a pretty big deal. The Bible sees commitment as a big deal. But it's also important because it's the soil that good things grow in. Good things take time. Do you know that? Good things take time. And commitment creates the space for those good things to grow. I have a picture that's framed in my office that I love by an artist and writer called Josh Nadeau. It says this: one cannot grow a tree in a moment of passion. That should be a word for our generation. Cannot grow a tree in a moment of passion. Passion is great, vision and excitement and energy is wonderful, but we can't build anything without commitment. And God is building something special in this community in BCV. There is so much more to come, but passion and vision alone aren't enough. Requires the slow, hard work of commitment, of developing true community, true friendships over time, creating the soil within which the things of God can grow. Friendships take time. Community at its heart is actually a series of relationships and friendships, the deep interconnectedness, and friendships take time. Some of my favorite people, some of my closest friends down through the years, when I first met them, my first opinion of them wasn't very high. They probably had the same about me. I didn't really like them. It's just true. And lots of them, we've been through some really difficult spells in our friendships and in our connections. And we've hit points of argument and difference and where we've hurt one another. Places where it would have been much easier to just walk away and say, I'm done with that friendship. But commitment, sticking around, working through those things, giving those things space and time to grow, actually built trust. And trust allows for honesty and vulnerability, which is the absolute sweet spot for life-giving friendships. We can't rush there. You can't have honesty and vulnerability without trust, and you can't have trust without commitment, without giving things time to grow and bedding in. And so if you heed our cry and choose a life group for the season ahead, I'm just going to tell you now, it probably won't feel awesome week one. It'll be good, but you're not going to walk through the door into a room of people that you may or may not have talked to before and go, my new best friend, I feel so connected at a soul level. Here's a key to my house. If you do, we're going to have a pastoral word. Don't do that. That's probably not going to happen. It might be awkward and uncomfortable for a little while. But if we commit, if we create space for something good to grow, I promise you that you will form connections that will deeply impact your life. Good things take time to grow. More than that, it is the antidote to our consumerism. Just swinging for all the big ones today. My son plays basketball, and there's a new season afoot, and he reminded us this week that actually what he needed was new basketball shoes, which aren't cheap, and you can't buy the ones that are worth buying, apparently, in a shop. They have to come from America. And Tuesday night, after tea, son was just setting, we were out in the back garden, he had found a pair he liked, they weren't, you know, two mortgages, just one. And so he came out, we looked at them. 7 p.m. on Tuesday night, we ordered them from America. Before 10 a.m. on Thursday morning, they arrived on our front door. I could not believe it. What a time to be alive. Right? It was like less than 36 hours. It just, I don't know. We can get anything we want. We can get it our way. We can get it almost instantly if we're willing to pay for it. And part of that's wonderful. But what that forms in us isn't actually great. We have a really low threshold for waiting, for compromising, or for being told no. You want me to do what? Pull into the bay number two and wait for 2 minutes, an additional 2 minutes, for someone to carry my McDonald's to my car. What? And I know I altered every component from its normal, because who wants pickles and no salt means fresh chips, and little Johnny should get bacon if he wants bacon, even if it wasn't normally there. But 2 extra minutes? You better believe someone should be carrying it out to me. Least they could do for this hassle. It's unjust. You've all thought it. How dare any company or person or product inconvenience me? I am the customer. You might think you don't have that mindset, but 50 years ago, the internet would have been unfathomable, right? All the collected knowledge and nonsense of humanity available to you 24/7 right here. Our grandparents couldn't have conceived of such a thing. Never mind what we can do with it. But watch your emotions if you go somewhere with no Wi-Fi and your signal dips to 3G and a web page has the audacity to buffer for 10 seconds. It's a justice issue, you'll cry. We're fed a constant narrative that we are the center of our worlds. That we have the right to what we want, how we want it, when we want it, and by gosh, if we don't get it, there are other places we will go. You can think what you like about that mindset outside of church, but when we approach faith and church and community with that mindset, or without acknowledging that that is now our default position, whether we chose it or not, whether we're aware of it or not, we come through those doors and into, you know, rooms like this and into these relationships and into life group rooms as consumers, expecting to receive what we want, fully ready to look elsewhere if the worship isn't just so, or if the people aren't quite my kind of people, or if the chairs are too tight, or the sermon is too long. As one of your pastors, let me say with as much love and as much care as I can muster, we cannot pop into a life group once every few weeks and show up at church a couple of Sundays a month when our weekends aren't too busy and then expect to feel connected to what God is doing in and through this community, or expect to feel the sense of belonging that comes with deep friendships that have been cultivated through committed time spent. And I'm not trying to guilt anyone or shame anyone in any way. I'm not trying to bully anyone into anything. I simply see so many people longing for what comes on the other side of commitment, yet unable or unwilling to get there. Often because the mindset that the culture around us has formed in us. And then we get hurt and we feel rejected or isolated or unseen, and we get mad at God or mad at the church because they can't fix it or they won't fix it. They won't give us what we want and what we know we need. And so we up sticks for pastures greener, or we simply give up on faith or at least on church. Please hear me, this is not an angry tirade. I'll put up on screen when I'm doing that. This is heartbroken sorrow. There is healing and there is hope. And I believe in the church, capital C, and I believe in the church, BCB. I believe in the redemptive power of community that carries us to the feet of Jesus to receive all we need in ways that we cannot get there ourselves. But it does not exist without commitment. And no one else can choose that for us. The life that Jesus calls us into is not a consumer sport. You and I are not the center of our story. Life and community, true community, is not about what we can get out of it or how much it meets our needs. Jesus invites us to follow him in laying down our lives, laying down our rights and our comforts, stepping off the center stage and entering into the bigger story that God is weaving to redeem creation back to himself. That will not always be easy or comfortable. It wasn't for Jesus, it killed him. And yet he did it willingly so that a different way of life might be available to all. A way of true, actual freedom, of peace and contentment found in loving and serving others, not in consuming, of joy found in generosity rather than in greed and accumulation, of security and hope found in deep friendships rather than strategic alliances and manipulated acquaintances. He offers a different way of being, and commitment is the pathway into true community. And it is a concrete declaration that it's not all about me or you. And I get that there are really good reasons why commitment is hard. And I get that health and life and all those things. So I'm not having a go. I'm simply imploring us, would we consider it? And there's lots of reasons why commitment is hard. It limits our options. And it means that we might miss out on something good or something better. What if a better option comes up? I better keep my options open. There are better sermons being preached right now. I'm not being self-deprecating. I don't need an awe. There are. That's just a fact. And you are missing them because you chose to be here. That doesn't mean that God can't powerfully meet you here and do all he wants to do in and through you here right now. What does prevent that is when we aren't present. When we can't engage with what he's doing because our minds are worrying about the other sermon that's happening down the road that you're missing that might be awesome. The truth is, if you were there, you'd be thinking about a different place and another sermon and you'd miss it too. There is always the potential of something or someone better in every circumstance of life. And if the enemy can keep us in that mindset, we'll always miss out on what God has for us. If you commit to a life group in the year ahead, good things will happen in your group. Good things will also happen in other groups. And God will move powerfully in other groups and you won't be in it. And you'll miss out. That's part of life. But if you don't commit for fear of missing out, you miss it all. Some of us find commitment hard because we fear that we're not going to be able to keep it up. And we might end up flaking out and letting people down. And it's better not to commit, better not to give our yes than to, you know, let somebody down in disappointment. And that's a real deal. I get that. And we do need to be careful how much we stretch ourselves and what we give ourselves to. But the trend I see in people who think this way is that you're unable to commit to anything. They're so worried about not keeping up their commitments, they don't commit to anything. And they end up disconnected and untethered to community. None of us are perfect, and life happens, and we're gonna make commitments that no matter how hard we try, we can't keep them up. And that's okay. It doesn't make you a bad person, but we will miss out if we don't try. And some of us have been in environments, maybe even churches, where we felt guilty or obligated towards commitment, where we've been expected to serve someone else's vision, build someone else's platform. And not showing up or questioning was seen as disloyalty. And maybe we burned out on being told we just need to be more committed. We just need to show up to to thing after thing after thing. And now we're really wary. We're really cautious. We don't want to commit anywhere for fear of being used. And again, that's a real deal. That's not okay. Commitment should never be about being used for someone else's agenda or being pushed to give, 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 produce, produce, produce to the place of exhaustion and frustration and burnout. And if that's been your experience, then I can fully understand a wariness and a hesitancy towards commitment. And there is no pressure. And there is, I'm not trying to make you do anything, it's simply an invitation. But for those places of hurt and pain and exhaustion, we need healing. Where we've been sinned against, we need to speak truth and we need to be heard. We need someone to listen. And we need to forgive those who sinned against us. We need the tenderness and the kindness of God's restoring presence. The hard part is that the things we need to heal are not found in isolation. The antidote to unhealthy, destructive community is not going it alone. It's the slow, gentle journey of learning to trust in healthy, Jesus-centered community again. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm by no means saying that we are perfect or that you won't get hurt in this community, because I could pretty much guarantee you will, because we're all broken people. And again, there's no pressure and there's no rush. But if that's your story, there's an invitation to consider committing back into the body of Jesus again. So finally, how do we do this? Really quickly, he says. Prayerfully. We've got to pray. What's Jesus actually asking you, of you in this next season? Doesn't matter what I say. Doesn't matter how many announcements we give and how many wonderful life groups we have. What's Jesus asking of you in the season ahead? What's he inviting you to commit to? Small no's allow us to make big yeses. So have you got a rule of life? Have you got, these are the priorities in my life for the next season, and these are the ways that I will make my decisions? We get it with money, right? If we say lots of little no's to a coffee here and a such and such there and just spending it every moment that we want, we actually save money and then can say yes to the big thing, like a holiday, if that's what we've chosen as a priority. It's the same with our time. If deeper friendships are a priority in my life in this next season, then I might need to say no to some fun things with random groups of people so that I can spend consistent time with one or two people. I might need to say some no's to say yes. I might miss out on some fun to form deep connection. One thing that I find deeply painful in my life and extremely helpful is changing my language from passive to active. Have you ever said the phrase, I would love to go to that, but I just can't? Have you? Man, you know, a life group on a Wednesday night, that would be excellent. That one looks really good. I like to trust the leaders. I'd love to go to that, but I can't do Wednesday nights. I play five-a-side on Wednesday nights. That's passive language. The true language is, I would prefer to go to five-a-side on Wednesday night. Right? Now that hurts, but it's true. I'm choosing to prioritize this over that. And that might be the right thing. That might be what Jesus asked of you, and that's fine. But when we move to active and telling the truth about our decisions, in this season of my life, lying in on a Sunday morning is more important to me than being in church. That's a harsh statement. But that might be the true statement. And in taking those to Jesus and dealing with them in our hearts. Do what you say you will. Let your yes be yes. Work on being that emet, that unchanging person who can be relied on. I realized even in worship this morning, I was thinking about this. I grew up in a home where this was a high value. My parents had a high value on when you say you're going to do something, you do it. You keep your promises. You're committed to the things that you commit to. And I hated it as a kid. But it formed something in me. And I remember hearing people talk about my dad after he passed, that when he walked into a room, People knew that it was going to be okay because he was someone that they could trust. Someone that was reliable. That wasn't because he was wise. Half the time he was bluffing. But it was because he was a met. His yes meant yes, and he showed up. And it impacted the rooms he walked into. And I realized that that's formed something in me. This isn't a supernatural gift as much as it's a muscle and a value that we work out. And we model to our children. And if you are a parent in this room, your children are growing up swimming in anxiety and fear and uncertainty. And what they need is a model of commitment. A model of what it means to let your yes be yes and to not be afraid of limiting yourself. Don't tell them to do it. Model it out. It will form something. And it will form something, and it's important even when it costs. Psalm 15 starts asking, Lord, who may dwell in your sacred tent? Who may live on your holy mountain? Like, what's the kind of people you're looking for, and who gets close to you, Jesus? Verse 4, those who keep an oath or a promise, even when it hurts, even when it costs, and don't change their mind. Finally, show up. Show up. Mundane consistency is incredibly powerful. Just show up. Your presence matters. It really, really, really matters. You might think you bring nothing, but you bring the you that God designed and made and shaped and formed. And this community and small communities need you. Pick a place that God's asking you to be and show up. Show up when you feel like it and show up when you don't. Be consistent. I will take, as I build teams and I've been doing for the best part of 20 years and leading stuff, I will take faithful over gifted every day of the week. These guys are about to go plant a church. Best advice I ever heard was 75% of pastoring is showing up. Showing up again and again and building a faithful presence in your community that is a mat that can be banked upon. Be a people that show up. Pick a life group. Commit to it. Show up or not. Whatever the Lord is asking of you, do that in this season. But if you want the fruit of community, it starts in commitment. Why don't you stand? Because that's more than you wanted. So we're going to pray as we close. There'll be tea and coffee. There will be air that is not the temperature of whatever outside, I promise. And there will be children to collect. There's a couple of things that the Lord's doing. Some of you, that thing of being burnt out, being pushed to commit beyond your limitations and beyond your abilities, being unappreciated and used, that's a real deal. And you need someone to hear and to look you in the eye and say, you were wronged. That was not the Lord. And to pray for you this morning. If that's you, we want to stand with you. Some of you are longing for connection and you're just not sure if you know how to get there. I'm going to pray for you. Some of you, your marriage is faltering a little bit, or things are hard right now and commitment is hard. And you're worried because some of the other feelings of love aren't there right now. And I feel like the Lord's asking you, will you commit? Will you trust? Will you stick when it's hard and do the hard work of building? And we want to pray for you. Some of you have a high value for commitment and you're watching other people around you not commit and you've got to a place of going, what's the point? If nobody else will, why should I? I'll just give up. Again, we want to pray for you. And then lastly, I really felt in worship that thing for our parents. If you're worried about your kids, if you're seeing some things in your kids and you're not sure how to parent it, we want to pray with you. It's not like we have all the answers, but part of it is teaching them the value of commitment and modeling it out to them. It's putting limitations rather than giving freedom. And it's really hard to do, but we want to pray for you. So let me pray and then we'll close. Holy Spirit, we welcome you. Spirit of wisdom, You stand above all the best thinking of this age. You stand above the lies and the half-truths of the culture around us. Spirit of wisdom, would you be our guide? Come fill us with the courage to stand against the tide, to commit to your bride, to commit to one another, to love and to serve with joy and gladness. Come, Holy Spirit. Come. Come breathe on your people. Breathe on our marriages. Breathe on our friendships. Breathe on our parenting. Come, Holy Spirit.
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.